Take you beyond the red light. Don't worry about it. Just keep on going. You'll be on our time and not yours. And with that, we're ready to begin with our first case, number 25-10834, United States versus Alan Pendergrass. Ms. Strickland.
Good morning. May it please the court. A district court procedurally errs if it fails to consider the kinds of sentences available for the offense of conviction. Here, the district court failed to consider the kinds of sentences available for an aggravated identity theft conviction because it incorrectly believed it did not have the authority to order that any part of Mr. Pendergrass's 2-year term of imprisonment be served on supervised release in home confinement. The relevant portion of the aggravated identity theft statute, which is 1028A, requires that anyone convicted be sentenced to a term of imprisonment of 2 years. And subsection B1 of that statute provides that a court shall not place on probation anyone convicted of a violation of this section. Critically, the aggravated identity theft statute does not say that the court cannot sentence the defendant to a term of supervised release.
Can I ask you a question, counsel? How do we distinguish this? What the district court judge did from the case called U.S. versus Manjaro?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there are...
Because the language there is the same. It's identical.
Your Honor, there are a couple of ways that Manjaro can be... Yes, Your Honor. There are a couple of ways that we can dispose of that case. Number one is, it is about a different statute. Now, given the language is the same, but because it's not the same statute, Mangaro is not binding on the court. The prior panel precedent rule doesn't apply here because it's not on all fours. And to quote United States v. Gillis, that's 938 F3rd 1131, this court has pointed out many times that regardless of what our court says in its opinion, the decision can hold nothing beyond the facts of the case. So different statute, this court can make a different decision. And the court has done so in situations like Fulford, which is...
But how do you deal with the language, the specific language that says, in any event, a sentence of home confinement is not incarceration?
Right, Your Honor. I think that is specific to the statute in that it is a 924C case and is not binding. I understand that the language is the same, but they're not related statutes, and we don't have to presume that they mean
the same thing. They may not be related, but isn't the analysis the same?
The language is the same, but I think this court is free to conduct its own analysis of the statutory text because Mangaro is not binding because it's not on all fours. And the other thing
Can I ask you a question about his request? He made the request in allocution, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And, I mean, I'm not saying we expect any more of him speaking to the court before he was sentenced, but he didn't specify what sort of home confinement he was talking about. He said a portion, partial, words to that effect. What is the contention that you make on his behalf now? What discretion or authority do you think the district court had to impose, if it chose, a term of home confinement for the whole period, the aggravated identity theft period, the non-aggravated identity theft period, or a combination of all of those?
Your Honor, I believe that the court could have imposed a term of supervised release to follow a term of imprisonment. I think arguably it could have followed the term on the other conviction, but at the very least the court could have imposed some nominal term of imprisonment, 30 days, even a year, and put some portion of it on supervised release and home confinement. And I believe that's what Mr. Pendergrass was asking for.
But under which sentence?
Under the aggravated identity theft statute, yes.
Okay.
That's our argument is the aggravated identity theft statute allows for that.
But do you agree that the district, even under your, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to understand your argument correctly. Even under your theory, do you accept that the district court had to impose some term of imprisonment on the aggravated identity theft charge?
Your Honor, I believe arguably it could have been an entire term of supervised release to follow the term of imprisonment on the other charge.
No. Just aggravated identity theft.
Yes.
Suppose a defendant pleads guilty just to aggravated identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
In the factual proffer admits the underlying violation which satisfies 1028 capital A. What can the district court do? Let's take the other sentence out of it. What are the options, statutory options available to the district court with just an aggravated identity theft defense?
So in that situation, Your Honor, I believe supervised release has to follow a term of imprisonment. So the court would have to impose some kind of term of imprisonment and then follow it with supervised release. That term could even be a day, but I think to qualify as supervised release as opposed to probation, it does have to follow a term of imprisonment under the statute.
But so you're saying home confinement as a condition of supervised release as opposed to part of the custodial sentence? Like, I don't understand. I'm the district judge in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You're now making the argument on Mr. Pendergrass's behalf. Tell me how to structure the sentence. If you're right and I accept your legal theory, tell me how to structure the sentence.
Your Honor, in this specific situation, I would say it could be the prison sentence that he received on the other convictions.
6 months.
Yes, followed by 2 years of supervised release with the home confinement condition, which is what makes it the equivalent of imprisonment. So the aggravated identity theft conviction could be punished just by the term of supervised release.
Okay, so you're saying 6 months or whatever the district court judge chose to impose for the other offenses.
Yes.
Followed by 2 years or 3 years of supervised release.
2 years of supervised release with the home confinement condition, which is what makes it qualify as imprisonment and satisfies 1028A.
So the full 2 years of supervised release would have to run with home confinement?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't believe he could just be placed on supervised release without the home confinement condition, because otherwise it would not qualify as imprisonment.
So your position is that home confinement qualifies as imprisonment?
Yes.
But then how do we deal with other cases like United States versus Chavez, where it says confinement in a halfway house is not imprisonment?
Your Honor, that's not home confinement. And I also, you know, it's not on all fours because we're not dealing with the same statute.
Okay, so that your position always is that it's not the same statute.
Your Honor, I believe we're looking at what qualifies as imprisonment for purpose of 1028A, and while those other cases may be persuasive mm-hmm. authority, they're not binding.
So is there any case, other than the cases you cited, which are not on all fours, that you're aware of where a court has held that home confinement can substitute for imprisonment in a mandatory imprisonment statute?
Your Honor, not from this circuit. I believe the brief contains a couple of cases, I think specifically from the Eighth Circuit, where they have said that a mandatory minimum can be satisfied by a term of home confinement, but nothing from this circuit, Your Honor, so nothing that's binding on the court.
Can I ask you another question, which is, my understanding is both sides agree that the standard of review here is plain error?
Yes, Your Honor, because there was no objection after the sentence was imposed.
But, I mean, I'm not sure you need to give up the standard of review so easily.
Okay, Your Honor, then I believe...
No, let me tell you why. I mean, there are some cases, including a Supreme Court case that says once a defendant requests a specific sentence, he preserves a claim that a longer sentence than the one requested is unreasonable. That's Holguin Hernandez.
Yes, Your Honor.
So does that case fit here?
I certainly don't want to argue against myself, so I would say that yes, and you could consider this to be preserved because he made the request. And the court did consider it and found that she didn't have the authority to do it. So, failing to object at the end of it is really just a...
So the district court judge in this case found that their hands were tied, so they didn't have the discretion.
Yes, she said several times she asked for authority to be able to do it. She said she was imposing the sentence because, quote, I have to. And she indicated that if she had the discretion, she probably would not impose that custodial sentence. She went on about how there is nothing to be gained from a custodial sentence for Mr. Pendergrass at this point. So I believe to the extent we would need to meet the third prong of plain error or just harmless error analysis, if it is a preserved issue, then the harm is there because the court said that she was open to sentencing him to home confinement and would have done so had she believed she had the authority to do so.
All right. Thank you very much. You save your time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. Gabriel Mendel for the United States. The aggravated identity theft statute requires that a district court impose a mandatory consecutive sentence of, quote, a term of imprisonment of 2 years. The district court did not plainly err by imposing a term of imprisonment rather than home confinement. This court's decision in, I guess we're going to say, Mangero controls here. In Mangero, the defendants were convicted of robbery and 924C offenses. The district court sentenced them to probation, including home confinement. The government appealed, arguing that 924C requires imprisonment, and this court agreed. The court held, first, that probation is an impermissible sentence under the statute, and second, that a sentence of home confinement does not qualify as incarceration. And those holdings apply here. Just like 924C, this statute requires a mandatory consecutive sentence of a specified term of imprisonment and prohibits a sentence of probation because the defendant cannot show any error, plain or otherwise, the sentence should be affirmed.
In this case, with this procedural mix of offenses, could the district court have imposed any type of home confinement for the non-aggravated identity theft offenses?
Yes, there was no requirement that there be a specific term of imprisonment on the underlying fraud or money laundering counts. That's not the claim on appeal. The claim on appeal is limited to the aggravated identity theft.
I know, but Mr. Pendergrass, when he provided his statement in allocution, wasn't very clear about what he was requesting in terms of the different sentences, right? And the district court hadn't yet pronounced sentence, so.
It's a little awkward, Your Honor, of course, because the language of the aggravated identity theft statute, like 924C, seems to contemplate that it will run consecutive to some other term of imprisonment, I don't know that itself requires that the
right. But you could, but the scenario that I presented to Ms. Strickland on a different question, you could have a person who enters into a plea agreement with the government to just plead guilty to an aggravated identity theft offense, with the government dismissing the other underlying offenses, and then you have nothing to run it consecutive to.
That's right, Your Honor.
Right, so it could happen that way, too.
That's right, Your Honor. And of course, in that case, our position is the same, that for that conviction, a term of imprisonment of not less than 2 years would be required.
How do you put aside Mangero for a second. How do you characterize home confinement among the different sentencing options available to a district judge? What is it?
It is a condition of probation, or it is a condition of supervised release. There is nothing in the federal code that allows the district court to impose home confinement as a standalone type of punishment. And I think that's what's notable is even the Bureau of Prisons, which of course is responsible for designating a place of imprisonment, is strictly limited in how much home confinement it can impose. So if you look, it's 18 USC 3624 C2, which is that even the Bureau of Prisons can only designate home confinement for a maximum of 10% or 6 months, whichever is shorter. So even the Bureau of Prisons could not have given Mr. Pendergrass more than about 2.5 months of home confinement. But those are the only three places in the federal code that home confinement is authorized. And since probation is not authorized and supervised release needed to follow the 2-year term of imprisonment, it does Mr. Pendergrass no good here.
Does plain error govern? I mean, you have it's not directly on point, but you have a statement in the Supreme Court's decision in Holguin Hernandez. It says if you request a certain sentence and the judge goes above that requested sentence, that preserves a claim that the chosen sentence was unreasonable. Is this similar or not?
If I can, I have a three-part answer for Your Honor, if you'll indulge me. The first is, I think, if anything, plain error is generous here, because Mr. Prendergast actually asked for home confinement in his sentencing memorandum before the first sentencing, was not given home confinement, didn't raise that issue in his first appeal. So arguably, law of the case bars this claim entirely. Now, we didn't push that in our brief because the defendant concedes in his brief that plain error applies. I think the government's entitled to rely on that concession. But I also think Holguin Hernandez is limited to the question of the length of the sentence. It's a substantive reasonableness. It's not procedural reasonableness. And I think that's important because the point of plain error is to give the district court an opportunity to understand what the issue is and understand why it got it wrong. And so we have all of these cases cited on appeal in the defendant's brief. None of this was put to the district court because the district court wasn't given an opportunity to decide, well, maybe I do have that authority.
Didn't the district, I understand your point and it's a good one, but didn't the district judge say, I can't do this? Like, didn't the district judge recognize to some degree the request that was being made of him or her?
I think that's right, Your Honor. And in a closer case, maybe plain error would be harsh. Here, of course, it doesn't matter because there's no error at all. So the standard of review makes no difference. Couldn't get past the first
wrong. Is your argument really that because of the first appeal, it doesn't matter? Well, if you didn't have the first appeal, okay, let's assume the first appeal hadn't happened, and this was the first appeal, could we maybe then make the argument that it wouldn't necessarily be plain error?
No, Your Honor, I was making a separate point, which is that if this court decides to sua sponte, revisit the question of the standard review, even though the parties have agreed it's plain error, the court could even go a step beyond plain error and say, because this issue was raised in the first sentencing and not raised in the first appeal, the doctrine of law of the case would bar it. Because the law of the case says, the first appeal, if you have the opportunity to raise an issue and you don't, you have waived it going forward. And so that would actually bar this court from considering the claim at all. We don't urge the court to do that, and we don't really think it matters whether the court applies plain error or not, because there is no error at all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Your Honor, I wanted to start with Judge Jordan asked the government, you know, what is home confinement? And it is defined by statute in both the supervised release statute 3583 and the probation statute 3563 as an alternative to incarceration. So that is what we are arguing. This is an alternative to the 2 years of incarceration here, and it can be accomplished by a sentence of supervised release. And relatedly, brings me back to Manjaro. As I've already said, I don't believe it's binding on the court because it's not on all fours.
I think you're probably right about that, but like cases should be decided in a like way, and you've got very similar language, and we'd have to explain why this case is different, and simply saying there's a different statute number probably doesn't cut it.
Yes, Your Honor. So I have a couple of things that are different. One is Manjaro did not talk about whether home confinement is an alternative to incarceration. It does not talk about that language in the statutes or in the guidelines at all. There's no discussion about that. So that's one way that it can be distinguished, since it's not binding. The other thing is that in Manjaro, the district court did exactly what the statute, the 924C statute, prohibited. It imposed a sentence of probation and imposed home confinement as a condition there. We are not asking for a sentence of probation because the statute explicitly forbids that. So that's two ways that Manjaro is different from our circumstances here. And I think based on the plain language of 3583 and 63 and 1028A, home confinement here can be an alternative to incarceration and fulfill the requirement of 1028A's term of imprisonment. As to whether it's plain error or law of the case, the sentence was vacated completely by this court. It was a limited remand in that Mr. Prendergast was only allowed to allocute But I believe since the sentence was completely vacated and the court had the discretion to impose supervised release, had she believed she had the authority to and said that she would have done so, I don't believe law of the case bars the claim. If there are no further questions, we would ask the court to vacate and remand.
Okay. Ms. Strickland, we know that you were court appointed for Mr. Pendergrass, and on his behalf and ours, we want to thank you very much for your service and for taking the case. All right, thank you both very much. Next case is